Flip the Script Wellness. I'm Heather Boggs, and today my guest is Amy Jeanguinat. Amy has spent her career working in the private forensic industry, supporting efforts worldwide to prevent and eliminate DNA backlogs, refine operational logistics, and provide quality and technical system support. As a former laboratory director and technical leader, her leadership and management approaches constantly evolved in response to demands of running a high-throughput laboratory. Workplace stress and its effect on productivity, turnover rate, and quality became a key focus of her research interests. In 2016, she founded MindGen, the Mindfulness Forensics Initiative, to build resilience in forensic scientists and leaders to reduce stress and burnout realized by industry-specific pressures, such as exposure to crime details, working in an adversarial legal system, zero tolerance for errors, and technical criticism. Amy has completed training in mindfulness-based stress reduction and is a certified teacher of ancient wisdom, yoga, mindfulness, and meditation. She is applying these techniques to bring mindfulness-based tactical exercises to criminal justice to help improve decision-making and the quality of work and life. Amy is a wonderful example of someone who flipped the script several times in her life by using her self-awareness and self-reflection to recognize areas that were not going well and make significant changes to live the life she wanted to live. Welcome, Amy. Thank you for coming on today. I'm so excited to talk with you. I was wondering if we could start by having you tell us a little bit about your journey to mindfulness and meditation.
So my journey really started probably in a darker spot in my life, in that I was doing some things to take care of myself, like trying to work out, going to the gym regularly, eating what I thought was healthy foods, but I still was experiencing a lot of dis-ease in my life. I was under a lot of stress at work, just with sort of the volume of work that was coming in. We were also going through a merger and acquisition at the time. My relationships weren't going that well because I was sort of running on autopilot all the time, that I was just really reactive to everything. And I wasn't able to bounce back from things like the common cold and flu. I would be sick for a lot longer. I just really wasn't feeling myself. And meditation was just like something that kept popping up for me. Like whether I went into my phone, it was something about mindfulness or, you know, just this meditation mindfulness cue was coming. So I decided to try a free meditation class that was offered at a local business every Sunday. So I started going and I would feel amazing when I left the class. But then probably immediately when I walked in my door to my house, it all went away. But I knew there was something there.
Right.
And I really just wanted to feel good again. I wanted to have energy again. And that's just really what launched me into looking at more of the mind-body sciences in order to help myself kind of get back to where I thought I needed to be.
Yeah. And obviously, as a forensic scientist, you're science-minded. And so it was a logical, I think, path to decide to look at the science of that mind-body connection. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm so analytical that really when the first training I decided to do was mindfulness-based stress reduction because it was based in a hospital setting. There was tons of research to support that it worked with people to help heal themselves and to help reduce chronic stress. And so I actually enrolled in a course at the University of Virginia that took me through 8 weeks of mindfulness-based stress reduction. And that was awesome. Amazing, not only in the epiphanies that I had in the course, but to see the other people going through it with me and what they brought on the first day and how we all left after 8 weeks. It was incredible.
The training produced its own data,
yes.
Literally. Yeah, that's amazing. So I know you are active in the forensics community. Are you still an active forensic scientist?
Yeah, so I consult now in forensic science. So I used to work in a laboratory environment and I was either working cases or I was managing the laboratory, the research validation work. And about 5 years ago now, I decided to leave that position in order to consult, which opened me up to be able to consult and build the forensic science side, but also in this new area that I was seeing was producing help for me in resilience, mindfulness, meditation, yoga. And so I really have sort of this hyphen life where sometimes I have to put on my DNA expert hat and sometimes I'm putting on my mindfulness hat, just depending on what I'm talking about. But they're both so interrelated in reality.
Yeah.
I went to the mind-body sciences because forensic side was exposed to so much stress and really vicarious trauma due to the types of cases that were being worked. And no, this like wasn't talked about. No one ever asked me if I was okay after working like a really horrible crime or a natural or mass disaster, you know, somewhere worldwide or in the United States. That level of support, it was sort of the culture of you have to have a special compartment in your brain, you know, in order to do this work. But we all know that leaks.
Yeah.
It doesn't just stay in that compartment. Like, it affects your health. It affects your communication. It affects your emotional well-being. So.
Yeah. So I'm sure there has been plenty of people in your field who have been seeking you out to help them manage the vicarious traumas and the workload, the stress load.
I'm really... really interesting because the very first, like after I left my position and then I kind of showed up at a conference and everybody knew I had left my position and I was in a high level position in a crime lab. And when they asked me what I was going to do, I said, well, I'm going to help with stress and I want to change the culture. And they all looked at me like I was insane. Like, one, we don't know how you're going to do that. Like,
right.
I don't necessarily know either, but this is a seed I'm planting, and this is a huge issue. This is like, this has never been addressed in my entire career. And now that I'm aware of it, I see it in everybody.
Wow.
You know, and having been a director of a crime laboratory and feeling like I couldn't institute the change while I was in that role, you really realize that culture is bigger than just like your building. You know, there's these systematic issues that put pressure on you that you feel you need to act and be in a certain way. So, but from there, like, I've been able to publish two papers, which was, you know, aided in discussions in crime laboratories. I've spoken and done workshops at a lot of forensic conferences in order to help them with stress. Finally getting the ear of other crime lab directors and how change can be instituted in the crime laboratory. And even spreading out to like other allied professionals in criminal justice, because we don't work in silos. So sexual assault nurse examiners and prosecutors and law enforcement are sort of these natural extensions of people who are all affected by the caseload.
The pressures we have just as adults in the United States, then you add, you know, the pressures of parenting and marriage and am I doing enough for my community? It's so cumulative and you end up just burdened and overwhelmed.
Yes.
You know, and then deciding what area you can let go to fit in time for yourself is really challenging.
That is one of the largest challenges. And what I can tell you, sort of being on the other side, and I don't even want to say I'm like solved on the other side. I realize now this work is never done. You work on your internal growth and expansion and the impact that you might be able to have. It's never done, so you can never get it wrong.
Right.
And you can never run out of time.
Yeah.
So I think when I realize time is just this really funny element that we have that we feel we don't have enough of, but you know what? I'm never done. Like, I'm never done with my to-do list. I'm never done with my work. And somehow it's all okay. You know, like, it all works itself out. And learning how to set really good boundaries between working and parenting and all of those things, that takes time and effort, but it's really worth it. And then you have much more to give. And you're even just like your energy that you bring out brings out the better in other people. And the situations become easier. So there's a shift in everything. It's not just you. Like, your own internal shifts allow the shifts to happen outside of you.
Right. Well, you know, the concept of flipping the script is that we're our own authors of our stories. And you know, I talk pretty much in every podcast about the importance of self-reflection, taking stock of things, you know, inner work. And that's how you have the awareness of what areas you need to flip. you know, that just aren't, you're just not living the story you want to be living. So what was your breaking point? You went to that first 8-week course. Were you all in at that point?
So my breaking point was probably when I quit my job, which was before I took this program.
Okay. Yeah.
That was sort of the awareness. Like, I really felt at that point that I was either, my marriage was not great. So I felt something was not going to go right there. I thought I would end up getting some type of terminal illness or that I might even die. And those all might sound like harsh realities, but that is how bad I felt
right.
emotionally and physically that I didn't know how I could keep up the pace. It's like, I think I had really bad role models that told us we could do it all. We should lean in. And I think I leaned so far in that I fell over and realized that a lot of those people that have that perception that they're doing it all have so much support on the back end. I mean, right. it takes an army and And really redefining, I think, what success looks like, especially for a working woman. And that is something that I'm still trying to uncover what I think the definition should be. But having it all wrapped up in titles and money and promotions and things like that is just a really unhealthy way to proceed. Once I took the mindfulness-based stress reduction course and saw just in 8 weeks, like a larger shift that I was able to make doing any other techniques before that, it's like, this is the information that I want to help bring to the community that I work in and the community that I live in. So I sort of launched now this 5 years of constantly taking courses and certifications and studying and teaching and trying to get the information out there.
Awesome. So what does, if someone says I'm at my breaking point, I don't even know where to start. Like, I am a hot mess and my life is not where I want it to be. I am not feeling well, but it feels so big. I don't even know where to start. What would you say?
It does feel big, and that emotion is real, and you don't have to try to make it go away fast. And one thing we need to consider is the momentum that's been building to get you to this point needs a stop. We need to stop the momentum. And that is always the first thing that I would tell people to do is we have to stop the momentum. And that can happen as simple as a pattern interrupt. So when you notice that you're starting to feel anxiety, or maybe you have an awareness of a body trigger, your face gets flushed, or you get tightness in your chest, or your neck starts to hurt, or you get a headache. Those are all cues of our stress response that's happening, that we want to break that pattern and try to start to self-regulate and tell our body we are actually okay. We can do a pattern interrupt in a matter of seconds. One of my favorites that I'm liking right now is connecting to the heart. And you can do that by bringing your senses inward. If you can, if you're in a safe space, close your eyes. If not, just keep a soft, fuzzy gaze. You can place one or both hands on the heart space and then take a long, slow, deep breath in, following the breath in through your nose, down your throat, and into your heart. And then as you exhale with ease, even slower, watching the air leave the heart, going back out through the throat and out your nose. Now, that's something you can do and then continue to move on with whatever you need to. Or if you have a few moments, just keep up with that practice of watching the breath in and out of your heart space. So it can be just a foundation. And then from there, it's really building the consistency. So maybe it's, I can only do 10 seconds of a pattern interrupt every day, but I'm going to try to do it before I check my email in the morning. Or I'm going to do it before I walk in the door to see my family, or before I make breakfast, or whatever you're doing. You find a way to make it consistent, and then you can build from that consistency.
A couple of minutes ago, you were talking about time and, you know, that it just keeps going and that will never be done. And it's about new practices. And I love that, you know, that we call it a practice. It shows that there's growth and setbacks and, you know, it's a practice, not a perfect. Yes. And I think one of the things that's so hard, just in my experience of trying to get people to establish like meditation practices, if they have one bad time of it, they quit. And it's so hard to get to the fruits so that the momentum stays going. And so my challenge with folks is helping them to see that changes are subtle and gradual and that you need to keep at it.
So I'll say two things. One, I want to talk about what a normal experience is in meditation. And two, a little bit about the realities of habit making. So
awesome.
I think we have, because there's all these 21-day challenges and 30-day challenges, we think that if we can be consistent for 21 or 30 days, that that's going to build our habit. But the reality in research is that most people take 64 to 254 days to build a habit.
Wow.
And that is trying to do it every day, missing a day, maybe missing the next day, but getting back to it. Even if you've missed a whole entire week, to not be hard on yourself and just start again. Because again, you have the rest of your life, whatever that looks
right.
like for you.
Right.
So we don't have to give up right away because it was hard. But I'll make that reality that it is going to be hard because most people have a misconception of what meditation is supposed to be like. So really the common experience is you should always make yourself comfortable. So if you think you need to sit cross-legged on your floor with like your hands up in a mudra and that's how you have to sit, that already can be an objection to
right.
trying to meditate. But I will tell you, even my child at a very young age, when he would pretend he was meditating like mommy,
right.
he would sit on the floor cross-legged with his hands up in a mudra, and that's not what I do.
Right.
So pop culture is
yeah.
teaching us these things from a very early age of
yep.
what meditation should look like. So I would say, be comfortable, okay, whether that's sitting in a chair, lying down, whatever you need to do. Then we want to try to withdraw from the outside world. The easiest way to do that is to bring our senses inside. So by focusing on the heart center, by focusing on our breath, by focusing on the mind's eye, whatever it is, we're going inward. The next thing that's going to happen is you're going to have thoughts.
Right.
So most people think, I'm not supposed to think during meditation.
Right.
So right away, they're like, oh, I'm having thoughts or my lower back hurts.
Yep.
So you're going to have thoughts. You're going to have sensations. You're going to have feelings. You're going to think about your to-do list or what you should be doing instead. So just know that that's natural and that may happen many times during
yep.
your meditation. But when you notice that that occurs, you drift yourself back to whatever that point of witnessing was, the breath, your heart, a mantra, whatever you had chosen. Then usually what creeps up is judging. So you start to judge. I don't really know that I'm doing this right. I've had to drift back and forth many times. This seems pointless. And you start to question yourself. So again, if you can get beyond the judging and go back to witnessing, eventually you're going to have these moments of silence. Silence and stillness can look like the space between your breath, the space between a thought. And those spaces, generally with practice,
right.
will start to get longer and grow for you. But even myself, who's been practicing daily for a while now, I will still have bad days.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's not like every day I'm like, yes, I get to get up and meditate.
Right.
Sometimes it's like, I really have to meditate. Like, I have to force myself to meditate. And so it's, you know, if you can build on a habit that you already have going for you every day and just add this to it,
right.
that can make things a little bit easier too. But just know that it's not that you sit down and all of a sudden you find stillness. It's
yeah,
you have to work on that.
I felt that pressure. So meditation for me probably 15 years ago was more of an extension of prayer. So that's how it started for me before I had really learned about meditation. And then I did my yoga teacher training. And there was, even within that culture, this pressure for cross-leg mudra, you know, in the zone, you know, examples of teachers and gurus with these amazing practices. And it was hard. The judgment crept in. I don't think I'm doing this right. It wasn't until I gave myself permission to sit super comfortably, have lots of pillows, make sure I always have to have a blanket on because if I'm cold, I can't relax and I can't be present in myself. I do not look like I'm meditating when I'm meditating.
Yeah. I mean, thinking of it an extension of prayer, I don't think it's too far gone.
Right.
Because the reality is in yoga, we have a whole set of practices that set us up to connect with something bigger than ourselves.
Right.
And that's however you define it.
Yep.
That could be the universe, that could be spirit, that could just be your own soul, that can be God or whatever name you call, Brahman, anything you want to call.
Yeah.
Anything. So we have these practices in yoga, like a physical practice, so that maybe we can be in a posture for a little bit longer. Or you just realize that I'm constantly modifying my physical postures. I should be able to modify my meditation posture too.
Yeah.
We have support from sort of the yamas and the niyamas, which teach us, you know, if we can have our mindset rest in these principles, that also makes life a little bit easier and we don't struggle so much with choices. And then you have, you know, a withdrawing of the senses, you have a focus and a concentration. Meditation is a state of being.
Yeah.
It's not a state of doing. And so that being doesn't always happen every time you sit down to practice meditation.
Right.
And then ultimately, where that transcends is that you connect with whatever that bigger source is.
Right.
And, you know, prayer is an avenue where you can connect with source as well. Sometimes I think prayer is talking to that larger self and meditation is listening.
Yeah. And so, you know, for me, meditation was very much a journey within itself, you know, and once you have given yourself permission to just be comfortable, be full of thoughts and mistakes and all, you know, all of those things, that's kind of when the subtle changes start to be noticeable. And it's just, I always want to just encourage people to just trust in the process long enough so that you can start to see those subtle differences in your life.
Yeah, and the subtle changes, I mean, I reflect back a lot on that first 8 weeks of like meditating every single day, that the biggest thing I saw was my ability to respond instead of react. So you have a split second when somebody says something to you that maybe needs or doesn't need a reaction to make that choice. And I was so on autopilot that so often my default reaction was sort of fight or defensive. And it wasn't just for me. I was fighting and being defensive for everybody else around me who wouldn't speak up for themselves either. It was sort of this need to like, no, the right way needs to be, you know, said and spoken. But I realized that's not always effective and wasn't always the response that was needed. And that also spiked my stress response really high when I was constantly on the defense. And so just having that space, even if it's just for a few seconds to go, what is the right response here, if any? Can I be silent and just listen? I don't have to talk every time that I'm pushed or my buttons are pushed. Other subtle changes was sort of non-identification with self. I think we so often think we're the only ones experiencing what we're going through. And we're all sharing in the human experience, even if we don't have the exact same childhoods and pressures and, you know, religions, ethnicities, race, you know, everything going on, there is a shared human experience that we are all going through, and that allowed me to have more compassion for myself and also more compassion for others. Say over time, probably 6 months to a year, is when I saw my health getting better. And that really was, I had a lot of digestive issues because digestion is so linked to the fight or flight response. It's usually not working correctly. And working on having a consistent, gentle movement practice, nothing, you know, too crazy, meditating every day, doing a focus on gratitude are probably the three main things that I integrated over time. And my health, just my energy got better. I was able to sleep through the night. But those things, it doesn't happen after meditating a couple times. You know?
Yeah.
You build up to it. And then I would say, now that I've gotten to a place where I've transcend sort of how stress affects me, it still affects me, but I know when it's happening now, I can better self-regulate. But now I'm able to, I can hear my intuition better. And so that's when I sort of know I'm able to connect to whatever the source is and sort of hear the answers to what the seeds and the intentions and the impact that I'm hoping to have through meditation.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty big transformation from where you started. And it's funny, I'm sure as time has gone on, you know, you said when you first mentioned that your goal was to reduce stress in your scientific community, and people thought, how the heck are you going to do that? The longer you were working on you, the better you were becoming at being able to be that for them.
Definitely. And be better in all the ways I show up. You know, I'm a better sister. I'm a better daughter. I'm a better mother. I'm a better wife. Like, right. I can serve people a lot better when I am coming from a good place. But that does take time out of your day. And right. So you need to, when you're filling out your calendar every day or every week or every month, have to include time for yourself on it as well. Yeah. So when we self-serve everybody else, it's just that's when we're not going to take the time. Time's going to be made for us. And that might mean laying in bed and not being able to get up.
Yeah. So how have you been balancing the career, parenting, all of that now? What is your biggest self-rescue plan?
Well, I would just say, because we all can relate to this, is that COVID really turned everything upside down.
Yeah.
I paused work for a good portion of 2020 because my son was at home now. So, you know, there was no relief for like a daycare or summer mm-hmm. camp or school.
Yeah.
And then my husband was also working from home full time. And so we're all under one roof all of a sudden, where I had gotten really used to having alone time, having everybody out of the house. And the focus of my business involved a ton of travel. And obviously all of that was canceled.
Right.
But I realized in those moments, I had to figure out what was best for myself and my family. So I was like, putting myself on hold until I am in a better place again. I listened to my own self. I wasn't feeling I was giving very good in a virtual atmosphere when I was still feeling the stress of, what do I do in this pandemic? Right. I don't know what to do in this pandemic. Right. How am I supposed to tell you what to do in this
right.
pandemic?
Yeah.
But I feel good now that I didn't just rush and like try to put out workshops and like try to do things, that I took that space. In that space, like we physically moved. Like I left the Washington D.C. area and I moved to Central Virginia, where now I'm in nature and I'm by the mountains and I am by water, and like that is so much better for my soul. I don't think that would not have happened if COVID didn't happen, because we were, you know, our whole year was planned.
Yeah.
You know, so moving wasn't anything we talked about, because we were just on autopilot, you know, doing your things. Everybody's working. Everybody's doing their stuff. But now, like when 2021 started and I said, I'm in a much better place. I feel like I can give again.
Mm-hmm.
Virtual school, we all know what to expect at this point.
Right.
So like my son's in a routine, my husband's in a routine at work. So it's like things settled down, but that took a good 6-9 months
mm-hmm.
to kind of get there. And like, again, we all expect within like 1-2 weeks, we're going to figure it out.
It's right.
Like, that's not the reality. And so now I think like the stuff that's happening in my career is because I was able to pause, and that energy from 6 months ago is happening now,
mm-hmm.
and six months from now, it's going to look different. But for me, having flexibility to balance it all and having really good boundaries and saying no, I say no a lot, that takes like your ego going, but I should do this, but you knowing it's not good for your own health
right.
to take on too much.
Well, that balance for me, it's less desire for achievement and more fear of disappointing. So, you know, for me, the saying no isn't about necessarily like missed forward opportunities, but it's more like, will they be disappointed in me if I say
yeah.
no? So that tends to be where my mental pressure comes from in terms of making space.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Our result, though, is the same, right?
Yep.
So it's important to know that, like, whatever it is that's feeding your mind all the time and telling you the stories, we're all telling each other different stories, but the result is the same. The result is burnout. The result is chronic stress. The result is disease.
Yeah. 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 The mind-body connection is amazing. And, you know, when I was in school for natural health, we had a whole course on the way that our brain triggers our DNA and turns switches on and off. And, you know, how our mental space and how we're doing emotionally, mentally, really impacts our physical health. You know, that I'm so thankful that science is catching up with spirituality in terms of the mind-body connection, because there are people who just want the data.
Yeah.
And they need to know it's real, you know, provable.
Yeah, I love the marrying of both things, because sometimes, like, science is not going to prove everything for us.
Right.
And it really, what we're trying to give data to now has existed for 3,000 to 5,000
exactly.
years ago.
Yep.
But where I find it beneficial is for the things that it can explain, like, well, why should I doubt this? If it was able to explain these other things that, you know, gurus and wisdom
right.
has been telling us for so long is now proven. So maybe it gives me trust that these other processes that science has not yet given data
right.
might just be a solution to making life this time around a little bit easier.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think we need to, there's the idea that when we make a new discovery, we somehow render the old ones obsolete. And that's not how wisdom works. You know, wisdom is present in so many different places. And it's there for the taking. And it's, you know, the experiences of generation after generation are there for us to learn from and to use. But as a society, have adopted a new is better approach to things. And sometimes that's not always the case.
I agree. I think our ancestors have the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And when we are so far as a society removed from our connection to the earth and our connection to our ancestors and our connection to each other, I think that's where the truth and the wisdom is really held, and is something that my own sort of self-study is guided more in those areas, because I don't think we have to reinvent the wheel for everything.
Right.
I think it's already been figured out, and it's more remembering and connecting back to those elements that can help us.
Yeah, I agree. So what are you currently working on?
So in this space, what I've been trying to do since 2021 is have some consistency in classes and courses that I offer online. So yeah, I'm just trying to build off of like what I see could be a possible need. And I work sometimes with organizations like teams through small group work mm-hmm. where we can do this in more of a private setting and really customize the approach to what are some specific stressors that exist in your organization or with your folks? And also on a personal one-on-one level, if somebody just wants to not have to share anything going on with anybody else.
Right.
We work to kind of just get them to a point where they have some processes and practices that they can work on to build consistency so they can see some relief from stress.
So if you... say you were someone who's listening today and then just wants to kind of self-start on a journey of developing some mindfulness and breaking some stress patterns, establishing a meditation practice, where would you suggest they start?
So a simple thing, if you want to visit my website at mindgenllc.com, it's MINDGEN, I have resources right on the homepage that you can download for free that talk more about simple practices for radiant health. I have practices up there on all different ways that you can work with your breath. Breath is the biggest factor that we have for self-regulation and telling our body that, hey, we're okay, we can stop this fight or flight response. And I also have some short meditations up on the website that if you want to listen to a guide to sort of just help you get started. But I do always tell people, don't reach for your app as a way to get started with meditation, because it becomes a reliance. And if your guide doesn't offer you silence, then you're never actually meditating.
Right.
And that's okay in some respects if you're just looking to relax or you're looking to fall asleep at night. Those are fine ways to do that. But if you're actually looking to start a meditation practice, I'd say don't reach for the app. Some books. One of my teachers that I've done a lot of training with over the last 5 years is David G. His book, The Secrets of Meditation, And his book, De-Stressifying, are both great beginner starters on the science of this, how this works, and all different types of meditation practices. The beauty is there are so many. So if you're finding that one doesn't click with you, you can try something else. But I would say don't switch every day. Don't even switch every week. Like, give it 30 or 60 days to see if it's having an impact before you try something new.
Okay, that's great. Books, I'm a reader, so I love a good book that I can go back to, re-reference, you know, kind of use as a little manual for life. So I'm a big fan of book resources. But I think, you know, we're being marketed to with a lot of app-based practices. And you're right, they don't make the space. And it's the space, you know, the miracles that can happen in the space. And miracles don't need much time, so it's okay if there's even tiny little windows of space for those big breakthrough moments and heart-shifting moments to happen.
Yes.
But we need to make the space. And so you might be sitting struggling for 20 minutes, but you may have had 90 seconds of stillness and space. That time is infinite in the universe. The universe, God, the divine, however you want to look at it, you know, what can happen in that 90 seconds is infinite.
Yeah. And important to know that those shifts, I mean, the couple that I mentioned, seeing a gap in my reactions, feeling like I could have more compassion, that wasn't a feeling I got in meditation.
Right.
You know, those are things where you see outside. And so it can be helpful to track. How did I feel before I meditated? What did I do for meditation? How long did I do it for? And then how do I feel after? Then also trying to notice what are the shifts that I start to see. And like, obviously in the beginning, you may not experience much. You may even feel worse after.
Right.
But like, as you start to show up and then like you can document, you can produce your own data.
Right.
On how it's helping you.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you said that. It isn't like you have this awareness. You're like, meditation timer goes off, you're done, and you're like, oh, I'm going to be way more compassionate now. It's not like that. It is, you just suddenly have an awareness that you were somehow different, and that there have been some sort of a subtle shift within you, and now you're seeing it play out in real time.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, so you gave your website, and I will link it on my social media as well. I feel like we could probably talk for 6 hours about all things meditation and mindfulness and wellness, you know, because it sounds like your journey has been kind of all in and extensive over the last 5 years. And I think it's a testament to the fruits of the work and the benefits that it's had for you in your life, which I think encourages, it just makes us want to share that because we want everyone to have that.
Yes.
So exactly. That's awesome. When you shared about moving this past year, I was so struck with how amazing it was that when given stillness, quiet, this tremendous slowdown, you had the wherewithal to make some big decisions about what was best for you and your family and your life. And I am so impressed by that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that I think is a little bit to the building of resiliency. And not to say, like I mentioned, I didn't know what to do.
Right.
So resiliency is not that we're, you know, bulletproof or shatterproof, or we're not going to experience a time where we feel a setback, right? It's sort of a roller coaster. And when I was able to get clarity, and really, for me, that happens in my meditation practice, clarity happens through that. And it was just like, we should move. And then it happened so easy. Like, my house sold in 4 hours.
Oh, my God.
House, like, everything happens fast. And when things happen fast, I feel like then that's like, that was the right thing.
The confirmation it was meant to be.
That was the build up because it was really easy.
Wow. I would love to have a chance in the future for us to talk again and maybe find a specific topic that we could get a little deeper into. You know, I know that'll depend on your schedule and what's going on in your life. We're blessed to have lots of people who have lots of great things to say, but finding the people that are meant to hear it, I think, is the challenge.
You may touch one person, and that was the person that was supposed to hear your message. And yep. I do think there is, you know, the butterfly effect or this interconnectedness where you touch that one person, they touched another person, yep. and like it goes on and on and on. So it may feel like starting small, trying to find consistency, trying to find voices, but that's just how anybody has to start.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me this morning and to share your story of how you've flipped some scripts in your life and the way that meditation and mindfulness has transformed your life and even your career. So thank you so much for that.
Thanks, Heather. This was great.
I just want to share again Amy's information. You can find her on her website at mindgenllc.com. And like she shared before, she offers some free downloads, lots of information, as well as information about upcoming workshops and things that she's running. She had primarily been working with the forensics community, but she is open to working with anyone who is looking to add these practices to their life. So feel free to check it out. You can find me at flipthescriptwellness.com or on Instagram at flipthescriptwellness. As always, I'd like to thank the musical group Slancha for the introduction music, and I hope today you find some time for stillness and maybe a little bit of a meditation practice. Take care and be well.